Session number 22658, Reel 20.
I'm at the end of this interview. I'd like to say that after the experiences that I've had through the war years, through life generally, and to express how fortunate I was in being married, having three children, all successful, with better educations myself, and their grandchildren, things of that nature. I have eight grandchildren, and we're reasonably stable in our ways of life. We're lucky that the families have been split up by divorce or separation or things of that nature. I worry a bit about the kids, the grandchildren, because in my situation, we wanted to give our children a better education.
When your grandchildren have asked you about the war, what do you tell them?
Basically nothing.
Why not?
It's probably like me when I should have been asking my grandparents about genealogy or something like that. Though I did have an uncle in the 10th Light Horse that used to tell me a bit about things, and I did used to listen to the fellows I worked with, which were all ex-World War I fellows, and so I had a fair bit of an idea of, you know, how they'd gone through their 25 years or whatever it may be between the wars. That was an education to me if I had any problems.
So why don't you tell your grandchildren about your experiences in the Second World War?
They've asked me. To start with, I've never marched on an Anzac Day. The only time that I ever, or two occasions I think that I marched since the war was on Alamein night. They had a march through the town. I turned up to that to some drill hall and got steamed up a bit like most of us did. And that was only a matter of a couple of years after the cessation of hostilities. And the only other time that I ever marched was when the Queen came out here in 54 or whatever it was. I get hammered about why I don't do this and why I don't do that.
Why don't you? Why don't you?
Oh, I just don't. That's the sort of worry me. I gave up RSL in 1946 because I joined in 46 or about 47 or 48 or somewhere like that. Mainly because there were that many associations going on that I thought, well, how the hell are we going to achieve anything if we've got the Naval Association, Air Force Association, the Unknown Soldiers Widows Association, and every other thing that went on, whereas compared with World War One, RSL was the only association. And if there's any trouble, the old-time leaders like Sir Talbot Hobbs and all those that line up and they march through the street and kick up a row about why they didn't have this and didn't have that.
If I can just get you to answer why it is that you don't tell your grandchildren anything about the Second World War.
Basically, it wasn't a matter about telling them about the glory things, or the gory things, I mean, not glory, the things of what happened through the war. I didn't want to ever see another war. Perhaps that's a bit of selfishness, but the thing was that I've been asked, you know, to express various things in regards to the, during the war to me. I just didn't want to do it for a couple of reasons, and one of them, I think, which if when you listen to these recordings, I'm not the best one of being able to express myself in
you've been doing a fine job. Terms.
So that's, you know, a number of my friends go to various schools of various denominations, public and private, and on Anzac Day they'll relate to a lot of things about the basics of war and why they these sort of things occurred, and of course I appreciate them, because when you think of Anzac Day and the Dawn Service and the like, that the amount of youth that follow and be there is quite unbelievable.
I'm interested that you say that you don't go to Anzac Day parades or marches, but you're also involved at the moment with helping out at King's Park. What's the job that you do there?
No, well, there's a group of us that look after the plaques. There's some 1,500 or 1,600 plaques up there of servicemen that were killed overseas or died of wounds overseas. And they've been there since, since World War One. I think in 1919 they set up these plaques. The families made some small contribution to the cost, and a plaque was created for the person concerned that had lost his life overseas or died of wounds overseas. And since then, there's always been someone from the RSL to maintain those plaques and their posts and make them quite presentable. And I eventually rejoined the RSL, and one day they made an approach, or a close friend of mine who'd been the secretary of the Honour Avenue for 50 years, he fell off the perch, and I thought, well, somebody, not that I'm going to be the secretary of it, somebody's got to replace him. And so I just quietly mentioned to somebody that, you know, if you're short of blokes, I'm one. Well, I suppose in a matter of half an hour, I was one. And so that's what I've done, and I'm only interested in in the labour side of it. I don't want anything to do with administration. I don't want anything of that nature. I'm just there.
So you're still interested in
helping out quietly.
That's so. And I mean, I look after, when I say look after, I just sort of watch what's going on with the fellows out of our particular unit from Western Australia, and I communicate with the Eastern States. And if, you know, if there's funerals or something like that, I trundle along. But I mean, there's lots of other fellows that I think there must be permanent funeral watchers these days, which obviously is going to happen. All that I can say in finishing off is that is I thank the person, or whoever it may be, that has looked after me throughout my life. I thank you.
I thank you very much. Thanks a lot, Norman.